Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Our next guest works to arm the next generation with geographic knowledge and global awareness. Ann Lewis is a 2017 Grosvenor Teacher Fellow. She's a special projects director at the South Dakota Discovery Center in Pierre, and she joins us from Pierre Now. Ann Lewis, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
A little expedition never hurt anybody. Let's start with the big picture. Tell us what the Grosvenor Fellowship is and how you came to take the trip.
The Grosvenor Teacher Fellowship is a professional development opportunity for educators who provided by National Geographic. Several years ago, Sven Lindblad, who was the owner of the Lindblad National Geographic Expeditions, gifted Gil Grosvenor, Chairman Emeritus of National Geographic, spots on the expeditions to educators. And the idea is that these educators are selected, they go and have these really rich, immersive experiences, and then they bring them back to their teaching practice, their classroom, or in my case, the hands-on science center, the Discovery Center here in Pierre. To become one, it's a rather rigorous application progress. There are essays, there's a video, there's letters of recommendation. 500 applicants this last year, and 35 of us were selected. So I feel very honored to have been selected and to be able to have done this.
Why did you want to do it? What was it that really drew you to do, you know, to go through the effort to take this kind of trip of a lifetime?
Well, I have been working with National Geographic on another initiative regarding their National Geographic Certified Educator, where they really unpack this idea of what it means to be an explorer and to help teachers bring that into the culture of their classroom. And it just resonated with me. And so I've always wanted to do something big exploration-y, I guess you would call it. So I thought when the opportunity came up, I thought this would be really something cool that I could do and really bring back to the people here in South Dakota, especially in Pierre, in the outreach I do and in the classes I teach and the teachers I work with.
What does it mean to be an explorer in 2017 versus some of those early National Geographic explorers? What do you think?
Oh, that's a great question. And the learning framework, I think, just nails it and how they describe it. An explorer, according to the learning framework, and this is the part that resonated with me, is curious and adventurous, but they also have a sense of responsibility and empowerment regarding whatever it is they're trying to explore and to understand. There's this idea of pushing the boundaries of what is known and going a little bit beyond that. It's not just having the big physical adventure. There's a story that I learned of when I was there. There was a photographer, Tommy Heinrichs. He was the National Geographic photographer, and he had climbed mountains and Everest and K2, and he's Argentinian, and he was part of this ski team, the first Argentinian ski team to go to the North Pole. And they had trained, and they, you know, overcame all these obstacles. And they were finally within sight of the North Pole, and then out of nowhere, this helicopter descends, and out jumps five guys, and they put on their skis, and they attach themselves to the sleds, and they ski around the North Pole about a couple of times, and they take the selfies, and they get the pictures, and they take everything off and get in the helicopter and go away again. And so Tommy and his team were just sitting there like, what?
Sort of dumbfounded.
Yeah, it was like, and I looked at that, and in talking to Tommy, I could tell he felt passionate about the polar region, and he was doing this not just to push himself, but to really explore and be part of this amazing place in the world. And I can't speak to what was going on inside the minds of those five other people, but from the outside, they were just there for the adventure. They wanted to check the box, but they weren't really feeling a sense of responsibility towards the North Pole or the polar region, whereas Tommy became very deeply engaged with the place and, you know, I documented it and used it to tell a story about the North Pole.
That's an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that with us. Tell me where you went and what sort of the goals of that expedition were, or the expectations.
I went to Svalbard, which is managed, administrated by Norway, and it's way up there. It's about the 75th latitude. We attempted Greenland, but the sea ice was too thick, so we got in the sea ice towards Greenland, and then we dropped down to Iceland. The idea is, I had my ideas of what I wanted to do, and I basically wanted to go and collect some data and use that process, those protocols, back here also on the prairie so that the teachers and the students so could also sort of get a compare and contrast understanding of how the poles are different than the prairie. So that was my personal initiative. The overarching goal of the trip, though, of the expedition, was to view wildlife and to see the ice and to just have this amazing experience in this part of the world.
I was reading some of your travel journal that you had posted online this morning. I was reading it, and I love how you keep forgetting to bring your camera, or you're so caught up in the moment that you're like, darn it, I'm not a good storyteller. But talk a little bit about just the value of sort of leaving your camera at home and seeing the sleeping Arctic fox, or doing the scientific research that needs to be done and doing that documentation without the selfie.
Yeah, it's one of the characteristics actually of according to National Geographic of an explorer is someone who can tell the story. Mm-hmm. I would just get so caught up in doing my research and doing the field work and making sure that I had everything for the protocols that I really kind of forgot that photo piece of it. Because it wasn't really about me. It was about the place. Right. And to the degree that the photos told the story of the place, and to the degree that my interaction with this amazing place makes it a better story, I think that's important. But me up there with the selfie, you know, I mean, I could go stand in front of a snow mound in the Walmart parking lot and take a picture, and, you know, it would look about the same. You know, it really isn't about me. It's about the Arctic. It's about the ice. It's about all those amazing life-changing things.
All right, but let's stay on you for just one more minute, and then we'll talk about some of the data. And just tell me what parts were really fun for you. What did you get to do that you just thought, oh, heck, you know, I'm really glad I got to do that?
Oh, well, the ice. You know, it sounds like ice. And before I went, I would have been like, ice? You know, that
from pier. I got plenty of ice.
Your windshield, you know, we don't love ice. But it's beautiful. It's like if you had never seen a mountain, then all of a sudden you saw a mountain. Your world would change by knowing such a thing existed. And that's the way I feel about the ice. It's like I did not know what it was. It reflects blue light because the ice crystals are so dense that it cannot absorb the blue light. So it's got this luminous quality that is just amazing. Of course, there was the wildlife. We did see a few polar bears, including tragically one juvenile dead of starvation. We saw reindeer. We saw whales. We saw seals and walruses. It was things you see in a zoo, but they were free and they were wild, and that makes a huge difference.
You got to do a little kayaking along the fjord, right?
Yes. I'm a paddler, and this was a life bucket moment for me. Yeah, that was amazing. It was a beautiful, calm day, and they decided to just break out the life, to break out the kayaks. And so, yeah, I was pretty happy that day.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the data and some of those connections to the prairie. Bring me back home and tell me what you learned that maybe is going to start to reveal more to you over the coming months as you process everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I thought, and this is very typical of field work. I take teachers out and we do field work. And you go out and you think it's going to be one thing. And then when you're in the field, unless you have like this well-funded research project, it turns out to be another thing. And that happened to me. I thought the field work was going to be about clouds and using the cloud app that I've talked about before. But it turned out to be about the surface temperature, and that's the radiant heat that's coming off the surface of the Earth. And so I was able to take, I brought an infrared thermometer, and I took everywhere I went as I was taking these readings, and I could do it on the ship, on the sea, on the ice, on the sea ice, and on the land. And it was just compelling, really, to see that open water is warmer than sea ice. And that has a lot of implications for feedback loops in terms of global warming and climate change.
Dig into that a little bit more. Tell me what, I'm pretty sure I understand what a feedback loop would be in that context, but for someone who's not quite caught up with us, bring them in.
Oh, sure. The warming that is happening in our world is caused by the radiant heat. The sun comes in, it warms up the landscape, and then the radiant heat goes into the atmosphere, and the greenhouse gases trap that heat that's coming off the Earth. And up to a certain point, that's a good thing, because if we didn't have those gases, the heat would just kind of go back out to space, and we would freeze every night. We could not sustain life. But the snow reflects a lot of the incoming sunlight, so it just bounces right back out. It does not go out, it does not get absorbed, and it is not radiated as heat. So when you have a darker surface like the ocean's surface, that will change the sunlight to heat, and, you know, it will radiate off, whereas the sea ice won't. So when you get this feedback loop of more ocean, you have more radiant heat going back out and being captured, for lack of a better word, by the greenhouse gases. And so, of course, that creates more warming, and that melts more ice. So you have more ocean, and it keeps cycling like that. That's right. The feedback loop.
Tell me a little bit about, as I looked at your travel log, there was this talk of a snow bunting and the Christmas bird count in the Badlands. What's the connection there?
Oh, gosh. Every year I do the Christmas bird count with my good friend Jennifer Fowler and one of the longtime birders, Jossie Baker. And Jossie every year wants to see a snow bunting. We go to the Badlands National Park. And it's one of those birds where it could happen. It probably won't, but you know, that's what her bird is for the Christmas bird count. And so we were up walking around this island or this place on Svalbard, and I hear a bird, and the birder that was with us said, "Oh, that's a snow bunting." Mm-hmm. And so that was just kind of a cool moment to connect. Here I am at the top of the world, back to South Dakota, and our fervor desires every year to see a snow bunting, which has eluded us so far. Maybe this will be the year.
What's next for you now that you're home? What sort of processing and stuff do you need to do post-exhibition?
Mm-hmm. Post-exhibition, National Geographic has asked us for some lesson plans, so I'll be putting those together. I'll be bringing this experience into practically everything I do here. I'm going to be figuring out what kinds of activities to do, like, for example, when I go present to schools or at a water festival, and with our teacher workshops, bringing this piece in, this great big connection that, you know, we have through atmosphere and carbon and weather and water. But none of us hardly think of it. You know, we're all connected to the polar region, even if very remotely.
How did you get involved in science then? Take me back a little bit.
I've always been curious. I sort of grew up in the generation where science was taught a certain way. And in fact, I had a really kind of, it was semi-traumatic experience in high school, where we were doing this lab, and it was a acid-base lab, and you had to go around with your little strip of paper, and what had happened was, by the time I got to a certain station, the sample had been contaminated, and I put my paper in and came out wrong what I knew the answer should be. But I knew this because I had talked to the other students. So I was left with this dilemma of, do I put down what my data said, or do I put down what I know what the right answer is? and I felt like that would be cheating. So I was sort of a good student, so I thought, well, I'll just put down what my answer said, and the teacher will see it, and we'll know that, you know, we'll have a discussion. Well, that didn't happen. The teacher just looked at it, marked it wrong, and that really turned me off of science but for quite a while. But I was always very curious. So through a really complicated, overly long, not worth the effort to tell the story kind of thing, I end up here at the Discovery Center writing a newsletter, and my responsibilities became more and more and more actually teaching some of this stuff. So I went back to school to Hamline University, got my master's in science education, and here I am. But again, it's that underlying curiosity, and you don't have to have any sort of science degree. If you're just curious, that's enough.
And integrity. The curiosity with the integrity, which was really important in that story.
Yeah.
So I think you're a pretty good storyteller, Ann Lewis. You just have to remember to bring your camera. That's.
I'm a better storyteller than I am photographer, actually.
What's your message for folks in South Dakota? We have a couple extra minutes here. What's your message for folks in South Dakota about the expedition that you really want them, you know, to take away?
First of all, keep your curiosity and keep an open mind. You know, the world is so beautiful. There are so many beautiful, beautiful places, and just enjoy it. I guess I don't really have a message other than just to stay curious, and you can be an explorer. That's really what it's all about. As long as you're willing to take responsibility for wherever your curiosity takes you, that's what matters.
You've been listening to 2017 Grosvenor Teacher Fellow Ann Lewis. She's Special Projects Director at the South Dakota Discovery Center in Pierre. Ann, what a pleasure. Is there a place people can see online any of the images, or is something going to be, are you going to be posting things so people can follow what your journey was?
Yeah, you bet. We will put it on the South. I'll put a link to everything on the South Dakota Discovery Center Facebook page, as well as our website. We have a blog. You have to dig a little bit for it. I can pop up a link just for a few days on our main page. So yeah, you can
Excellent.
Definitely check in there.
Thanks for your time, Ann.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.